Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness and the total capacity of the human being, who we are, becoming who we've always been, and what we can really learn from these ancient traditions that are about our essential being, really. That's why I'm talking tonight to an old friend, Yitzhak Berry. His newest book is called Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, I'm so excited to be with you, Alan. It's really a pleasure and honor.
We talked about this for a long time. So,
Yitzhak, are you here with me?
Yes, I'm very much here, bro.
Okay, sorry. That's much better on my end. So my first question, sorry for the interruption, was how do you define shamanism? I mean, how would you, you know, tell other people what that means?
Well, I think there are many different explanations to the word shamanism, as much as many as shamans themselves. But I think that the way I look at it is it's the collective spiritual and practices experiences that people have from the time they walk on this earth, and that include the practical part, or the work with the elements, and the work with spirit, which is not separate in many indigenous traditions. They believe that the seen and the unseen world contain energy and consciousness, and they are all part of the ability of people to live on this earth and survive on this earth in harmony with their environment.
Do you think Western religion, and also you write in this book, Western medicine, have lost that connection to the spirit?
Well, I think that it's absolutely true. I mean, the three religions, the main three religions, separated between those who are connected to God and those who are worship God. They put a messenger in between. In many shamanic traditions, each person is connected to the great creator, or the great mystery. You don't need a rabbi or a priest to tell you what's right or what's wrong. I mean, that's what we are all trying to do now in the revival of shamanism, is to give back the power of connection to spirit to all people.
But you, in the book, you do talk about, is it your great-great-grandfather who was a tzaddik, a sort of wise man, in the talk about that, how he fit into what it is that we're discovering now, you know?
You know, the ancient, or the old Kabbalistic tradition in the Jewish tradition is very much what we call the mystical part. It is in many ways the shamanic tradition of the Jewish tradition. So my grandfather was a Kabbalistic rabbi, and he was a healer too. It is something that I never really knew, because this was not something that people spoke about it in our family, because in our tradition, we wanted to be something new. We denounced the religion aspect of the Judaism. So and my great grandfather, what he worked was in the Kabbalistic field, was about the struggle between good and evil forces, and the life purpose of each person, or the tzaddik, the righteous, to fight that fight between the two essential forces of the universe.
Right, and you're really saying this shamanic understanding is a part of everyone. I mean, and we've just forgotten that connection. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the connection with the elements, with the weather, with the animals and the trees, that the feeling that we are not separated, that we are not just human being on this earth and everything else is here to serve us, that which is what in many ways a big part of the Jewish tradition now, that the animals and the plants and all the universe, it was given to the human race or to Jewish people to be served to mm-hmm. for us to use. In the shamanic indigenous cultures, the idea is that we are all part of it, that the animals and the humans have equal, and the plants and the minerals and all of it, it's all part of a whole ecosystem that one depend on each other. There's no one dominant energy or race or species that is better than others. They all have to work together to be able to continue to have a harmony in nature.
Mm. Right. You talk a little bit about being the reluctant shaman, but so tell me, which is beautiful because everyone went on their path is reluctant to follow. That's the hero's journey, you know. You have to be called a couple of times before you answer. But what was that moment for you where you said, oh my God, this is real, this is true? What was that moment of discovery? What was that moment, you know?
I had a series of these moments, but I think that one of those was in the Andes when I was when I had a healing session with one of the shamans there. And I was transported into a past life experience that later on I proved that it actually happened in Vienna. I was totally in shock because of the emotional response that I had experiencing this other lifetime, which actually proven that some fears that I had, fear of heights, was part of that lifetime. And once I realized that and I processed it, I realized that that my body now reacts differently to height. So that was one experience. And then the second experience was with my first ayahuasca ceremony that I took in the jungle with the shuar. I went on a trip with John Perkins there. I experienced the work of the shaman and in the spiritual and the physical world, which were equally powerful. And I could not understand, I couldn't, in my mind, in my logical mind, I could not understand how, when I see a vision, that vision is also manifested physically in my body. It took me 8 months of deliberation of and in many ways depression, because I could not consolidate these two teachings. One is
could
that,
you give
that
me an example of what was the example, if you don't mind sharing, because it's a little abstract.
It's a little abstract, said. Yes. While I was taking the ayahuasca, or going through the vision of that, the shaman invited me to come and do healing for me, and I experiencing his anaconda coming into my body and cleansing my digestive system, and my body was responding to the anaconda as if a physical anaconda was entering into my rectum all the way up into my body.
Wow.
And I was twisting and turning, and then at one point there's a cloud came out of my mouth, and he sent the jaguar to swallow all of that dark energy, and I saw it all happen. And the moment that it end up it was released, I felt it in my body, and then after that he sucked the ayahuasca or the death energy out of my chest and into his mouth. I really felt how that energy comes from all parts of my body. Every cell of my body came to sucked out of myself, and all of a sudden, in the middle of this vision, my head cleared.
Wow, great! That's thank you for sharing the details, because now I get it, and that's undeniable. When you have an experience like that, it's like, you know, this stuff is real. But I was going to ask you about the role of, I was going to get into it later, but since you brought it up, you know, the role of ayahuasca, or as Castaneda says, power plants, because, you know, in the Castaneda books, he says that, well, he was just given those plants because he was so dense. And some people say real shamans don't need those plants and they just use drum. I mean, what's your belief about the use of hallucinogenic plants as opposed to not using them?
So there are, in every culture, in every tradition, there are people who are using medicine plants. It was done in the Bible time, and it was done in the Amazon, and even monkeys and elephants are all using these kind of things. But in the Andes, for instance, my teachers, they claim that you should not take that because it can destroy the makeup or the DNA of your brain. And especially ayahuasca, because ayahuasca is very strong. And they believe that a shaman needs to be able to go into the spirit world on his own demand. Because you cannot imagine going into on the street and you facing a problem and you say, sorry, one second, I have to take ayahuasca. It will take me 4 hours to get an answer.
Right.
You have to do it right here and there. You have to teach your brain how to switch from the conscious, the everyday consciousness into a shamanic state of mind. And I think that I truly believe in that. I really, and that's what I teach in my classes, because I think that that's very important to be able to switch on demand your state of consciousness and to transfer into this to the different spiritual world. That's what I do.
But you use the ayahuasca to have a breakthrough also. So I mean,
of course. So. I think that there is a difference between people who are mountain people, where they don't have those plants, and then the Amazon plant, the Amazon, or the lowland of the Amazonian tradition. It's a different cultures and a different uses of different plants. And then in the Amazon, yes, they do use ayahuasca. But I want to say something about that, because most people think that ayahuasca is hallucinating, and that's the purpose of using it, which is totally not true. Originally, only shamans used to take ayahuasca. And the reason why they took it is so they can go into the spirit world and journey into a person's body to see where is the poison arrow, or where is the stuck energy or the disease manifest in its body. And the only time when people take ayahuasca, they are not sick, is when they have a vision, when they need to go into a vision quest. Regular people don't do ayahuasca every second day of their life. You know, it's just taken for a special occasion. Today, it's done in a little different way, and it's very much abused. And I mean, I can speak to you for an hour on the abuse, all of that culture.
I think
that
it's abused too. I mean, every weekend in Brooklyn, you could find 3 or 4, 10 ayahuasca circles going on. So. Yeah.
But I got to tell you something. I just had a shamanic gathering in Central Park, and in the middle of the session, in the middle of this event, I saw two religious people walking in, and I was totally surprised, from Brooklyn. They came to me and they asked me my name, and I said that my name is, yes, they want to talk to me about ayahuasca.
Mm.
I almost fell off my feet, and I says, why do you want to know? And he says, well, we
you,
do
you
that.
You mean there were Orthodox Jews that came in and asked you about
yes.
that?
Yes, with pears and hats and black and white, wearing black and white suit. Uh-huh. It turned out that there in Israel and in Brooklyn and many religious communities, they have ayahuasca circles, ayahuasca uh-huh. prayer circles. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, but what do you think? Do you recommend that or don't recommend it? I mean...
Well, listen, I think that people, when they are ready, when they do some kind of shamanic experiences before, so they know how to work with spirit, they know how to read spirit, then they understand the symbolism and the meaning of what the vision that they are seeing. So they need to be prepared. I mean, you have to remember that people in the Amazon, they are getting prepared to do to travel between the worlds from the time they are born with the milk of their mothers. Mm-hmm. You can take a religious person and give him ayahuasca and not expect, like this person who came to see me, that he's going to go crazy because he went paranoid, and that's why he came to ask for help.
I see.
Because there is a contrast between the culture that we live in and the culture of the Amazon. It's two different energies, two different vibrations, two different symbolism. And in order for you to use the medicine of the Amazon, you want to be in the Amazon. You want to understand the Amazon. That's why you have so many people who are affected negatively by using ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm. But I also think, this is my belief, that all these traditions are sort of falling away and we're all moving into a new frequency. I mean, even the old-time religions. And I think that's why it's so important what you're doing in New York, creating New York Shamanic Circle and all those shamanic events, because you're empowering people in ways that I think these old religions don't. You know, that's what I like about what you're doing, you know?
Well, that's the purpose of it. The idea is that I believe that the work we do allow people to experience their own connection to spirit and bring their own power. It is the most democratic spiritual practice that you can have, that people relying on of answers by asking their spirit guide, their teachers, not somebody that from the church or from the synagogue or from the mosque. It's their own experience, and you cannot deny your experience, and that's so beautiful about it, because it's empowering people to be truly authentic with spirit and nature and the environment, and be responsible for their life.
Mm. So did you help these religious people that came to see you by helping them shift that perspective?
Well, I could not do that because it was in the middle of a ceremony, so I could not. But I asked them to contact me. But, you know, I have quite a few people who are coming from Peru and coming from Brooklyn and coming from England and coming from all kinds of different places where they took ayahuasca unprepared, and they are all distraught and paranoid, and it's changed their life in a way that it's not what really meant. I'm very much against the ayahuasca culture it's not just in Brooklyn, it's everywhere around. And
yeah.
The negative effect is not so much for us, the people in the north, but it's also the shamans themselves, the cultures where the ayahuasca came from, becoming corrupted with the money that we are using, because we are taking societies that are used to rely on economy of sharing, or sharing economy. Mm-hmm. And we are creating rich people, or the spiritual people there, becoming rich, and they are destroying the ecosystem of the tribes. They are greedy, and they are trying to get as much money as from us. And we are on the north, the white people from European and American, whoever, are greedy spiritually. Because we are starving spiritually, and we're thinking the ayahuasca will give us the answers.
Right, that's a really good point. That's why it's so epidemic and so widespread. People want a pill or a drink, in this case, to get them spiritual. And I think, you know, your work, the shamanic, the drumming, the going in, it's a longer road, but it's more satisfying. Talk about that. Talk about your work in bringing people to these other states through drumming and dancing and moving and singing. Yeah, talk about that.
So there are many different ways to experience shamanic consciousness or enter into the spirit world. In our work, we are working through rattling or drumming. And the vibrations of that drumming help us to enter into the shamanic consciousness, to meet spirit guides. And spirit guides, you probably know, there are different spirits in the lower world, middle world, and the upper world, in the three different cosmology.
Can you just describe what those worlds are? For people who don't know, what do those three lower, upper, middle world mean?
So, in many traditions, and I'm not saying that in all traditions, but in many traditions, they believe that there are life form or life energy within the earth, life forms in the world that we see and experience in our five senses, and there is one. There is life forces in the upper world, which is, we call it heaven, we call it sky, and each of those places assign different energies. So the upper world is the world of the masculine energies, the world of ideas and logic and philosophy and teaching, and so the teachers, the angels, the spirit guides in the form of human figures are residing over there, and that's where we go to ask for help from those teachers. In the lower world, that's the world of the mother, the world of the womb, the world of the what's called Pachamama, Mother Earth. That's where the lava, the furnace of life, is there, and that's where the anima, the life forces of the universe exist, and that's where we found what we call power animal or spirit medicine in the form of animals, because they obtain the life force of or the medicine that relates to each of us. And then in the middle world, that's the world that in the Kabbalah we call it the tree of knowledge. Is the tree connect the two worlds, that the feminine and the masculine, connect them both together. The roots are sucking the energy, the nutrition from the mother, and the leaves, the canopy, are receiving the energy of the sun, which is God, the energy that loves us all, that gives energy to all being. So the tree is the connection of all of them. So the tree, in many ways, is the Ecuadorian Quechua tradition, it's called the waka. It's the sacred elements. And there are many different elements, sacred elements like that. It could be the mountain, the rocks. They are connecting between the two worlds. And so there are different energies between the three worlds. And so in our evenings, we are teaching people to connect to those energies, to those teachers, guide, allies. And through that, we can travel into an unlimited bank of knowledge. And we use that to help people find answers about their fate, life purpose, about health issues, about commitment to their life. It's a healing tool to help people to live more consciously aware and to make a difference in their own life and other people's lives.
But, you know, traditional shamanism, or at least the ones that I study, it would be the shaman who would journey to those other worlds for the person. But what you're teaching is the person doing it themselves. Is that what's happening?
Well, yes, that's true that others, that the shaman journey for the other person. But I truly believe that we are all shamans.
Yeah,
that we all have the capacity to transcend between the worlds. It's not a gift that it was given just the shaman. The shaman may use that more frequently. He have a gift for that, or he make a commitment in his life to help other people. But every person is a shaman. Every person know how to dream. Every person know how to hug and listen and be a healer to other people. So I think that part of my work is to help people realize that the shaman within them, so they can be empowered to find answer for themselves and for their for the other people or for the family or the community, so they would not be relied on a professional shaman to tell them what to do in their life. They can go and journey inside themselves and find out answers.
So why you're not? Saying you're upgrading the kind of role the shamanic tradition had in the past. I mean, you're bringing it into the main culture, and that's, you know, it was usually one guy in the village that was a shaman. You'd have a problem going, but I think because times are changing, we are accessing our own potential. That's the purpose
that's
of
right.
your work. It's, yeah. So that's exciting
That's very exciting because I truly believe that we are all shamans and we all have the capacity. As humans, and I'm not saying that animals are not shamans, but that as humans, our DNA is built to help us survive in the environment that we are living in. And the survival is a physical, sensational, using the senses, but it's also using your visionary capacity. That's why God gave us dreams and visions, right? So I think that the more we encourage people to use those gifts that God gave us, the more people will be responsible for their life, for their community life, for the environment. And this is our best hope.
Would you say then that we're all becoming tzaddiks in that way?
Oh, I hope so.
I don't know.
I mean, we have a huge wave of evil spirit running around the world. So I don't think that we are all becoming tzaddik, but I think that
not everyone, but the people you're working with is your intention, right? Is to bring that.
Yes.
But what do you think about this wave of? Do you think we're in a wave of negativity, or has it always been that way, or is it more obvious now? How do you see it, this world at this moment?
You know, in 1993, according to the Quechua tradition, the Inca tradition, began a new Pachacuti, a new period of time of 500 years. That's how they count the time in 500 years in Pachacutis. And 500 years before, right? I mean, from 1993, 500 years before that, that's where the Spaniard came and conquered South America, right. and Atahualpa was killed, the king of the Inca, and that was the end of the old Pachacuti. The new Pachacuti is the new period of time where the eagle and the condor will fly in the same sky together. The culture of the east, the west, and the culture of the north and the south will merge and fly together in the sky. The eagle and the condor representing each one of them. So it's a new period of 500 years of cooperation and femininity, or the return of the feminine energies of peace and harmony. And when this time ushered itself in, the evil forces, or the black forces, the old time, are trying to resist it. And I think that we are now really in a period of time. It's a huge magnitude is that the more the light forces are pushing forward, the harder the black forces are pushing back. And you can see it in the, I don't want to be sound too political, but you can see it. The majority of the United States are all progressive.
Right. But how
they
long
is this? The election in the last 7 years, and the black forces, the evil forces, are pushing back, taking democracy, taking freedom, taking all the achievement. They are trying to push back. They're going against time. But we would need the light forces really need to push back. We have to understand that the history is on our side.
Well, how long is this battle going to last, you think? Because if we're moving into a new time, let's get there.
Alan, I hope it will be in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. I do hope. It's a universal fight between, like my grandfather did. It is the good against the evil. And this is an eternal fight between these two forces. And what we need to be, the people with the higher consciousness and the people who are with more of the feminine energy, the consciousness, is to be, continue to send love and spirit and teach people of their own power to push back the darkness.
But when you say darkness or evil, what is the motivation of those forces to just feel separate and disconnected? And they're like the corporations. They want things for themselves, right? I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessarily evil. It's more immature, ignorant. They don't see a bigger picture.
You can think about evil spirit or negative spirit as energy that is roaming around the universe, looking for people who are full of fear. They are trying to get into the cracks of fear, and the fear provide them with greediness, and that's what they are trying to do. Is they're trying to feed off other people's fear.
But what do they get? Let's say they get energy from fear, but doesn't that eventually end for those forces? I mean, isn't it like, when is that enough? I mean, it feels
what's the
very,
purpose of that?
Yeah, why are they doing it? Don't they ever get enough? I mean, it seems very ignorant.
You know, when you are afraid, and you know, if you look at our president today, one of the things that I did when he came to power, I went and I asked my spirit guides about that, and he chose me a trauma or soul loss that he had when he was young. And that soul loss is the reason why we are all suffering his action. So he's a very insecure, very infantile, looking for looking for approval because he's not sure of himself as a man.
And, right, but that's not evil. So
what he's trying to do, he is trying to force other people to prove himself on them. It's not something that you do. It's not something that people with more higher consciousness do.
We don't. Hello? Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's not something we do because we're more evolved. We've been around. We didn't suffer those situations. But I'm just saying, don't you think he'll learn at some point in some lifetime that there's a better way? I mean, isn't the universe evolving towards goodness? That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I believe that the universe is evolving toward goodness, and I think that there is a resistance between the evil forces or the dark forces to push back, to resist that change.
It seems like that. No, I think so, and we could look at that in terms of like corporations that want to. Or even like if you watched 60 Minutes the other day, the drug companies were behind the opioid crisis because they wanted to make money selling more drugs. So would you say that's an aspect of the dark? Maybe it is an aspect of the dark forces, right?
Of course it is. Of course it is, because one of the symptoms of evilness is greediness. And greediness come from... from not having enough. And so corporations are built for profit, and they are always looking for more, never mind the benefit for other people. So if corporations can change and become a social organization or social responsible, then it's a whole different thing. But when you have a corporation that all they care, even though that they know that they create harm and killing other people, then we can change the consciousness. And I have to tell you, I work with quite a few top executives, the Fortune 500 people, and they are all human beings like you and me, but they are all pressured by corporations, by the system, to provide more. Profit. And so they are shutting down their heart, they're shutting down their humanness in order to provide the stock market with higher profits.
Well, that is negative. I mean, it seems like what you're saying, because you talk about illness in your book, and it's like the society itself has this illness there. You know, which is affecting all of us, right?
Yeah. And so if I want to take it to a larger context, is that, with industrialization, the society became, people came to live in more urban community, urban setting. And when you leave 8 million people in one little island, like we do, the sense of community is gone. So the size of the population make it impossible for us to feel connected and responsible for the well-being of a community. People feel more responsible for themselves only. But if you go out to a small village in Ecuador or in New Jersey or to other places in Massachusetts or other places like that, when everybody knows each other and they celebrate holidays together and they shop together and they grow food together, then the level of evilness would not be as big. What I'm trying to say is that with the breakdown of communities, it's a breakdown of social responsibility. It allows people to close their heart, to feel that they are separate and they can do whatever they want just for themselves, without responsibility to the person that lives next door to them, without responsibility to people who are sick. They are totally living in a different, separate universes. And that's what we really have to repair. We have to build small communities within our big cities so people can start feeling more home, more connected, more responsibility for each other.
That's what we're doing. I think, you know, the New York Shamanic Circle, I'm involved with lots of communities, food community, the healing community. So
yes,
we are building these small communities within the larger, you know, impersonal space that we have. But let's get back to your book for a second. And, no, I appreciate everything you're sharing. And you know, you talk about lots of things being your teacher, you know, and I think that's a concept that people don't realize. You talk about how the river is your teacher, or this is your teacher. Can you talk about what you mean by that, you know, in that way?
You know, the shamanic philosophy or cosmology and the whole shamanic wisdom and teaching comes from observing nature.
Uh-huh.
It is. There's no God who came and gave us the wisdom. The wisdom comes from watching what God did. So if you look at the river, and you look at the way the water carries the leaves and or going around stones or creating white water, destruction and obstruction and the way they flow and where they come from, and so they come from the top of the mountains, which is where the God is, right? So that's the beginning of life. And it goes all the way down through all these tribulations of and flowing and white water and dams. And it's, if you take that and you look at it as a more as a poetry, as a symbols, as a metaphors to your life, and it's at the end, it goes into the ocean, which is the end of our life, which is like where we all going to. That's one way to look at your life too. And are you the drop of water? Are you always staying in one place, or are you always going downstream into the end of your life? And so that's the way wisdom began. And so you look at the animals, you look at the hummingbirds, and the hummingbirds always going to look for the sweetness of life within the flowers. Why
nice.
Don't you be like a butterfly, or why don't you be like a wolf that always look for team, for others in the community to work as a team, to feed the family and to be loyal to the community. Mm. So we are looking at different characters of animals and or the elements, like the fire, the power of the fire is to transform wood into smoke. So you take the wood and the smoke carry your wishes or the growth of yours and transform it into a prayer of God. And so there's many metaphor and many symbols and rituals that we are using to teach people the symbolic aspects of life. And it doesn't come in a book. It comes from experience and by watching, by observing, by being open. Mm. Part of living in a big community or big cities in like New York and other places is that we are always trying to protect ourselves from being exposed to nature.
Right.
We are turning the air condition. We are putting the heat on. We don't want to feel cold. We don't want to feel wet. We don't want to feel nature.
Right.
We don't walk barefoot, bare feet.
My theory about how people get back to nature is their obsession with sex and their pets. You know, that's the only nature that people have in a city. And that's, you know, that's why it's so rampant here, these sort of obsessions. And in nature, you know, when we're connected to the elements, all those things are much more in balance. So I agree with you. I agree. But,
yes.
You know, and thank you for, yeah, what else were you saying?
No, I think that is absolutely right. We, part of the work we do is to go out into to the park, into nature, into the rivers, hold stones in your hand, go barefoot. In the shamanic tradition, that's how you teach children to become shamans first. In the first few years, you are teaching them to develop intimate relationship with the elements. How many times we touch water every day and we don't even pay attention to what water is?
Good point. Yes.
How many times we are using fire and we don't even think about what fire is? The just transformative of the fire, the curative power of healing power of fire. Or water,
just the magic of fire. I mean, how is that even happening? I mean, no one can even explain it. You know, how is that? What is a flame? What is that? It's just, it's really, when you think about it, it's just all magic. So, I mean, it's a real poetic way of looking at the world. That's right.
You know, in the Celtic tradition, The word shaman is a word for a poet, because
because why you say?
Because shamans used to be telling stories, telling poetry. That's how you teach children or people. You don't teach them by telling them what to do. You teach them by telling them stories. So the name of a shaman is in the Celtic tradition is a word for a poet.
Right, the shaman. What do they call this? Yeah, I did hear. That's a good way of putting it. But thank you for that. But one more thing I wanted to talk to you about, which is really the main part of your book, is the healings that you do on many, many different levels. Can you talk about some of the techniques you use? And why they work, and, you know, and some of the experiences you've had using those, because
each tradition in shamanism uses different techniques, and there are so many techniques that people use from every part of the world. Because I study mostly with the Quechua tradition in Ecuador and Brazilian Amazon, I'm using mostly this tradition, and I'm using also some soul retrieval and other drumming technique that are developed by Michael Hunter, based on Mongolian tradition. I'm mostly using La Limpia, which is an energy cleansing. But the idea is that in surrounding our body there is a negative energy that is came to us through our life experiences and by other people, curses and evil spirit and other being in places that have negative energy. So I clear that energy and I bring new energy, or you can talk about it in the scientific way. You can say that I am reducing the amount of positive ions and I'm increasing the negative ions to bring more freshness into the energy body, energy field of a person. And then that empower a person to be fully balanced and more powerful in the world. So
and how do you do that, though? How do you actually do that? What's your process?
Oh, that's very involved. It involves using sugarcane rum and plants and rocks and eggs and bells and whistles and singing and extracting negative energies. And so there's many different stages of that. But then I also do soul retrieval, because in many cultures they believe that all our sicknesses are come from losing part of our soul due to trauma, either physical trauma or emotional trauma. abuse, sexual abuse, and so on, is when people are disassociating. It's called in psychology, that when they're disassociating from part of themselves. And of course, that limited them to live a life fully, and they become depressed, and they become angry, they become resistant to any kind of change. So a big part of my work is also to do soul retrieval or soul mending, and that's what I teach at the New York Open Center for the last 8 years or so. And it really helps a lot of people to recover their lost part of themselves and bring it back to them and to feel complete and happy again. And so that's technique. And then there are techniques that I use from the Amazonian tradition, removal of evil spirit, or they call it Akura. Those are the evil spirit that are roaming around and trying to suck the energy out of people, the people who are afraid. So they enter into their energy field and they suck their energy out. And so I wouldn't say a big part of my work, but I do that quite often. And that's really helped people to live life much more happier. And there are some people that had nervousness and twitching, and it's all gone with the help of removal of negative energy. And I'm also using a specific technique with it's called Takuma needles. It's a needles of a palm tree that you tap on the skin of the body to invigorate the nervous system and to rebalance the energy field. And that's really a great technique to rejuvenate the body, but also to clear pain, back pain, shoulder pain, headaches. And
really,
also
you tap with palm leaves on the body to clear the pain? Just tap, or you? Is there a certain way you do that?
Well, think about the body or the skin as the largest organ of the body. Your skin, the outside, the envelope of your body, is full of nerves, sensors. That send information into your brain. So by tapping on different parts of the body, it correlates to inner organs in your body, and it also correlates to physical experience and emotional experiences that you are a block energy that you are holding for so many years. So by tapping on it, it sends messages to the brain to go and heal or attack that place and to release that energy. So instead of stuck energy, it releases it. And that's how they pain relief. And there are certain places in the body that hold more fear than others, like the fear of flight and fright, right? Of fright and flight, where the body condenses itself. And if it's happened many times, at the end, you get back pain and shoulder pain and headaches because the muscles are too tight over there. So you release the acidity in the body. You're opening the muscles up, and you let the nervous system or the flow or the meridians or the chi to flow through the body, and so there is less pain. And I had clients who a yoga teacher who has suffered for 20 years from back pain. She called it chronic pain. In one session, it was all gone. So it's miracles.
But would you say at the core of shamanic healing is the idea that the human body is really energy and not so much physical? It's about movement and flow, right?
I mean, of course. I mean, in the shamanic tradition, everything in the world is made out of small energy particles that bang each other in different speed and create different form. So any one of us is not really who we are. Our body is 80% water and calcium, magnesium, and 4 pounds of 4 pounds of bacteria and viruses. You know that we have 4 trillion viruses and microbes in our body.
I guess it's but
yes, we do. And so this is not you. So the only thing that in the shamanic tradition that is real is the vision, is the dream. We are all a dream. And that's why with the shaman, if you are a shaman, you're not trying to fix a certain part of the body. You're trying to fix the energy that flow through all of those, through your intention or through those equipment or tools that you are using with, to move the flow of energy, to rebalance the flow of the river within your body, or you call it the river of light in the body. That's really what you're trying to do. The physical manifestation of diseases come because there is stuck energy, the energy that does not flow, and if it doesn't flow, it creates disease.
Right, but I agree. I mean, I did know a Mexican shaman who would use eggs, and if there was pain in the body, she would roll an egg over that area, and it would away the pain.
Right.
I mean, how does that work? I mean, he said the egg is a symbol of an unborn dream. It will never be a chicken. So it can be used as a substitute to take away this unnecessary pain because it's a dream we don't want to have. You know, that was their reasoning. How do you explain it?
Well, what he gave you is a beautiful poetic way or symbolic explanation, which is beautiful, which is the same as I was talking about the river. But in all seriousness, an egg has 7,000 little pores in their shell, and that shell absorb and release energy from the chick, right? From the baby. And so when you rub the egg on the skin of a person, it absorbs the energy that the body emit, and it brings it in. So it sucks the energy and bring it inside the egg. And and that's how the pain, because the pain is basically the blood flow doesn't know how to continue to flow, right? So it creates pain in your body. So
that makes sense.
You're releasing the energy that's stuck in your head or in your part of your body. And I had that with a person who was a dancer who had a car accident in his elbow. I was rolling the eggs on his elbow, and the eggs explode from the energy that he was sucking.
Wow.
So, it happens quite often because that the egg sucks the negative, what we call negative energy, out of the body. It's extracting that energy out. And the unborn dream, and there is a many. The egg is the largest cell, so it's an opportunity to restart your life. Also, it is also the shape of the universe. So the earth has the magma within, which is the yellow, and then we have the white, and then we have the atmosphere all around us. So it's all symbols, and every cell in our body is built in the same way as the eggs. We are all eggs.
Right. Well, we have a light, energetic, Castaneda would say we are luminous eggs, basically.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are luminous eggs, and then that's where we're trying to clear in the La Limpia ceremony.
I see. With the palm leaves, that one?
No, with the eggs and with the aqua florida and with the sugarcane rum and with the fire, the smoke.
And the smoke and being smudged, all that yes. whole ceremony that you do. Do you have any workshops coming up? Do you have things that people can come to that you're going to be doing?
Yes, on a regular basis, and the New York Shamanic Circle is always available for people to come and learn how to journey and how to do shamanic work. The website is nyshamaniccircle.org. You can always find us and go on our mailing list so we can send you newsletters with all those events that we are doing. And then on my website, which is just myname.com, itzhakbiri.com.
Can you spell your name?
itzhakbiery.com. And you can find out all this information. If you are in Italy, you can come in November. We have a workshop there. I'm doing a trip to the Amazon soon, and I'm teaching here and there. Or if you are in the Bahamas over Christmas, come to Shivananza Yoga there. There are many different things. There are many different programs that I do, and you're welcome to join.
Well, I think it's great what you're offering people, and I think you've been successful because you're so passionate about the whole field, and you see it's made a difference in people's lives for sure.
So, well, I think that's an amazing, satisfying aspect of that is to see how in one session or a few sessions people's lives change and they live a happier life, you know, that they don't have to divorce their partners. They can continue to move on and become better version of themselves.
But tell me, where do you think your work is going? Where would you like it to go? What's your big vision for you, you know, that's worth the planet, human civilization? What do you see?
Well, I think that we touched upon it. I think that what my work is really about creating communities and making people feel they're not alone in this world, that there are some people they can go and cry and laugh and be heard and be seen. I think that that's so important for all of us to feel. But I also, where is it going? I'm organizing a big conference next year in Ecuador. One of the shamans there, my teacher requested me to bring North Americans to an European to Ecuador to meet the shamans, the Yachaks, over there in the Andes, so they can meet them in their homes and then do healing work in their homes. So I'm creating a big conference next year in June for the solstice. So what I'm trying to do is to bring more the understanding between the two cultures and to bring them together. I hope it's going to work out. And the other part of that is that I really see that the young generation of the indigenous people, the son and daughters of the shamans, really need our support and appreciation of their fathers, mothers, traditions, so they can continue to do this work. And by bringing people to their land and showing them that we value that we we're willing to pay or help them survive doing the shamanic work, I think that it could be a great contribution to preserving their old tradition and feeling them worthwhile doing this work. Because it's some of the shamans that I know already passed away, and they didn't leave anybody behind to teach them their secrets. And with every shaman that that are passed away, we are losing a roadmap, a blueprint to people's, to our own civilization's survival, because they know the teaching of the plants, the teaching of the weather, the teaching of the elements, and the teaching of spirit. Without that, we could not continue to survive in this world. So I think that it's very important for us to help the new generation of shamans in Ecuador and other places in the world to continue to take over their fathers, mothers, ancestors' work.
Right, because you're saying, I mean, you're sort of implying that the next generation, the younger generation, is really pulled into the Western material form, you know, the iPhones and the cars and the products, and they don't see the value of their own tradition because they see just the material that's in the Western world. And by hopefully by then showing that, oh, these people, these Westerners, are not so interested in that material, maybe you could show them value in their own tradition.
Yes, absolutely. And I see it every day, you know. I mean, every day that I'm there, I can see how there's a huge struggle for the new generation in Ecuador to become a business people, to become computer scientists, to make money. They really want to make money. And I mean, we are the Western culture, especially the American culture, are incredibly powerful by providing the tools for greediness, and they really want what we have. They really want
right.
to,
and we to don't want it anymore, right? We don't
know. Well, we don't want it. What we want is what they have, and what they want is what we have. So we have to find a way to honor each one, and to understand that greediness would not really lead us to anywhere except disaster and destruction. But we need to find a way to preserve these ancient teachings, not just for them, for us, for our grandchildren. You know, I have three grandchildren. I'm very concerned about how they will, what kind of world I leave behind, and what did I do? And how would they look at me when there will be no bears in the forest, and there will be no jaguars. It will be all in the storybooks.
It's already happened in Europe. Was full of bears at one point. There's not a single bear left in Europe, and you know, it's happened already. So we do have to do something, because it. And I think you're right. Preserving the shamanic culture, the connection to nature, is our salvation in a way. And,
exactly.
That's
what
I
believe.
Here we are. Yeah, I think. I mean, I love nature. I mean, I love the cities, but I also need to get away. So thank you for this education that you brought here and to everybody. Is there anything you want to just say?
Well, what I would like to is to say, get involved, you know, be part of a community, of shamanic community, or consciousness community. The most important is the community, and to understand that by being in a community, you are helping yourself, but you are helping other people not to feel so lonely, so separated. And separation bring all these diseases and sicknesses that we have, and addictions to all of those things that we don't really need. And the shamanic path is one of those ways. And so I invite people to come and be involved.
Well, thank you. I appreciate, you know, what you're doing, because I think it's really valuable for everyone to understand some aspect of their shamanic world. This is your latest book out, Shamanic Healing. You have two other books as well, right?
I have a book that is called The Gift of Shamanism, which is about how vision heal. How can you journey into the spirit world, or see in dreams, or in holograms, in other way of seeing that can really help people in their health. And then I have another book is Shamanic Transformation, which is a beautiful book. That is, I ask 50 of the most well-known shamans today, what was the moment of transformation? What the eureka moment, the moment that the lens on their eyes changed? Mm. What was it? In the same way that you asked me earlier,
right?
That I realized that the world is not the way I imagine it to be. And so I have a beautiful collection of stories from Sandra Ingerman and John Perkins and Alberto Violo and Mike Grasselman and Tom Cohen and Luis Miguel Madrona. Plenty of people who wrote books before, but they never really share the innermost personal moment of
nice.
Their transformation. So it's a beautiful book. It's
That sounds great. Did you ever meet Sergio Magaña from Mexico?
Yes, sure. Yeah.
I think his teachings are special, really special. I've interviewed him a few times, and I think he had some really great secrets from the old Toltecs and the old shamans of Mexico.
Yeah.
So
there's
so much. Yeah. It's all very exciting, all of this, and I'm sure I'll see you around New York in one of our communities, right?
Absolutely, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out and being available to share this. I now know a little bit more about you and your work. I mean, I've seen you. I think we are on some panels, but it's great. I just feel you're going deeper and deeper into this, you know.
Yes, I think that it's it's really necessary today for all of us to devote the short time that we have on this earth to do something that is positive, that somebody that can contribute to other people's life, instead of thinking just about the next dollar or the next golf course that you can build on.
Right. No. Thank you, Yitzchak. Yitzchak Berry. I've been talking to Yitzchak Berry. Yitzchak. It's the Hebrew, right? For Isaac.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes, yes.
And Isaac means laughter, doesn't it?
That's right. Yes.
That's right. So his book, Shamanic Healing, his latest book, Shamanic Healing, Traditions for Traditional Medicine for the Modern World, and your website, again, is the... What is it, the New York, what is the website?
My personal website is Yitzchak Berry, Yitzchak Berry, Beery.com. And the group that I co-founded is nyshamaniccircle.org. You're welcome to come and contact me through Facebook or through my website. I will be very happy to meet with you.
Great. And maybe I'll even come some. I've been to a few circles here and there.
Yes,
I'll come
I know.
To some more. Yeah.
Yeah, we had this amazing shamanic gathering in Central Park. We had more than 200 people there this Sunday.
When was that? This past weekend, you said?
This Sunday, a couple of days ago. We had a beautiful, beautiful ceremony in nature, with celebrating nature and spirits. Next year. It's going to be our 20th year of celebration in the park. The Great Hill,
The Great Hill. Yeah, no, I will definitely come at some point. Yeah, I'll come to some of your circles too. But thanks for being a guest tonight. And
thank you very much.
This show will be archived on BBS Radio.
And I'll send you a link to that, okay?
Beautiful.
Okay, I'll just say good night. This is Alan Steinfeld, and I hope you enjoyed that and learned really about what we're all capable of being and the power and the vision and the insight I think the human being has innate within their own psyche, in a sense. So thanks for listening. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, or watch my YouTube channel, youtube.com/newrealities, and stay tuned next week as well for a new show. Thanks for listening.